You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news. Sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show.
Welcome again to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. On this program, ESPN icon anchor Stuart Scott passed away. So we're going to talk about Stuart Scott and Stuart Scott's passing. Also, Oprah Winfrey versus black leadership. Actor Lou Gossett Jr. versus the director Steve McQueen. We have a question of the day as well. Jay-Z said that hip-hop has done more for race relations than most icons. So we're going to talk about Jay-Z's comment. The world of news and entertainment, we have some more news and entertainment also on the show. But I just want to welcome you on. And if you haven't checked out the show before and you want to check us out in the archives, you can go to espritradio.soulofsyracuse.com/BOBC and check out our last show, Ebony Magazine versus actress Stacey Dash, Sony Pictures versus Black Hollywood, Finesse movie review of Top 5 starring Chris Rock and Rosario Dawson, and also we had some other extras, Uncle Ruckus Watch with Stacey Dash and all of those things. So go check those out in the archives when you get a chance. And I just want to also say, don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Black on Black Crime Show. It's on Facebook, BOBC Show on Facebook. All right. Man, I don't know why that was so hard to get out. Now, before we get started on the program, I just want to give you a couple of quick news stories and give Finesse a little time to settle in, and we'll bring him in just to get you up to date on what's going on in the world. I guess I should say Happy New Year since it's our first show of the new year. There's been a lot of new laws that have been passed over the new year, so I guess we should start with a little bit of that as well. In New York State, you have to recycle tubes, like television tubes, after January 1st. You can't sit them on a curb. You have to get them picked up. So laptops, any electronics, mostly any electronics, you're going to have to recycle or you're going to get a fine. In New York, parents will be allowed to put a hold on their child's credit cards to preserve their credit. Now, this is new, that if somebody tries to use a credit card from one of your children, you can actually put them on hold as a parent. New York State passed that law to begin the new year, and minimum wage went up from $8 to $8.95. Now, if you don't know, for the 101st straight day, oil prices have gone down. So if you notice the low gas and oil prices, hey, it's about the economy. So things have been going well. The White House press secretary, Josh Earnest, isn't making life easier for the House Minority Whip, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, who became tangled into the controversy following the reports of his speech that he once gave to a conference of white supremacists. Now, Earnest said that it will be up to the House Republicans to decide if Scalise should keep his leadership post despite the admission that in 2002 he spoke to that group in Louisiana that was headed by Grand Wizard, they say former, but I wouldn't go that far, Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke. Now, the White House press secretary went on to say if Republicans do keep Scalise as one of their leaders, it will reflect on their party's values at a time when the GOP is trying to reach out to voters of color. And so I want to say this, it just shows that's not a party that you should want to be involved with. But that's just me. Just wanted to throw that story out there. Now, for the second straight week, New York City police officers cut back on their actions in the streets and arrest less than half as many people and written more than 90% fewer summonses than a year ago. The slowdown was built as a drastic drop of activity that began shortly after the murder of the two uniformed patrol officers who were technically undercover. That's a whole other story. In Brooklyn on December 20th, so across all 77 precincts of the city, the arrests have gone down and crime has actually gone down. I think they're proving their point backwards that they didn't have to heavy-handed patrol the black community so hard. It's not making them look good. Now, NBA fans gave Cleveland Cavalier LeBron James and Golden State Warrior Stephen Curry an early lead in the NBA All-Star voting. Now, James leads the overall voting with about 553,000 votes. That's for the Eastern Conference. And Curry had about 549,000 votes to lead the West. Now, the other top vote getters for the East were New York Knicks Carmelo Anthony, Chicago Bulls Paul Gasol, Washington Wizards John Wall, Miami Heat Dwayne Wade. That's according to ESPN.com. And those results were released today. The West, the top vote getters over there, Kobe Bryant, Anthony Davis from the Pelicans, Blake Griffin, and Mark Gasol. So just thought I'd throw those in there. All right. You're listening to Black on Black Crime on Esprit Radio. You can call in and join us, 909-265-9189. That's 909-265-9189. On this program, we're talking Oprah versus black leadership. She made some comments that we want to discuss on this program to see how, if she's kind of undermining what is going on in the rest of the world. But I think she was promoting Selma, so I'll save my argument till later. Actor Lou Gossett Jr. versus director Steve McQueen. There's a new movie, Book of Negroes. Lou Gossett said it was better than 12 Years a Slave. I'm sure Vanessa's going to yell about this one. But he was in both, so we'll have to see how that's going to go. And our main topic is ESPN anchor, iconic anchor, Stuart Scott passed away. So we're going to talk about that and more. But before I go there, take a quick break, let's bring in Finesse and let's see what's going on in the world. What's going on, Finesse?
Hey, Mr. Esprit, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
I cannot complain. Well, I could complain, but I'm not going to pay attention. So.
Yeah, you could complain.
No one pays attention to Finesse.
Oh, yeah, they do, because I did get some comments about how good your review was of Top 5, so we'll have to check that out.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. But see, like,
yeah,
I told people that Deion Waiters was going to be traded, and they said I didn't know what I was talking about. He just got traded.
Did he get traded?
Got traded
just
to
All-Star break.
He got traded to Oklahoma Thunder.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to work out nicely. How long do you think he's going to get traded there before he gets traded from Oklahoma?
He'll be cut.
Think he's going to get cut.
Yeah, he'll be cut. They got Reggie Jackson and Kevin Westbrook. You tell me when you're on.
See, that's what I'm saying. From Westbrook to Durant and now Deion Waiters, only one ball on the court. That's going to be a little tough.
Yeah, but also the Knicks traded J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert to Cleveland.
Whoa.
It's a three-player deal. See, this stuff is just breaking. I gotta let you know as it happens.
Man, so who did the Knicks get?
Somebody they're going to cut later on. It's not important.
They freed up some cap space. We know what they really did. I was trying to make it interesting.
In the words of Aaron Rodgers, relax, R-E-L-A-X. You're going to be non-significant until next year. Relax.
There you go. They're going to just go through the motions a little bit, and we'll see how that's going to go. Man, all right. Deion Waiters was not going to be there long. Once LeBron settled in.
It was a matter of time. It didn't mesh well in Cleveland. I wanted him to go to the Heat. I thought he would work better there in the Heat. He needs some veteran leadership around him to teach him how to be better at his position. And it's just not there in Cleveland.
LeBron was there. He couldn't bring Deion along fast enough?
I'm sorry, am I stuttering? Didn't I say veteran?
Okay,
leadership?
My bad. You said veteran. Oh, yeah, that's right. My bad. He needed veteran leadership. That's why he went to Miami. So I see what you're saying.
People get mad, and I'm a Heat fan. You know this. Dwayne has and always will be the captain. LeBron came in to win a ring. Now he went back home. He can't lead like Dwayne. I'm just saying he's a great basketball player. I ain't taking nothing away, but that doesn't mean that you're a leader and a captain.
Now, I absolutely agree, and I am a fan of Miami as well, and I'm telling you, I don't know how to feel about LeBron leaving, but I don't blame him, so he can always come back to Miami. He didn't burn his bridges, but he is free when he becomes free agent. So, you know, do what you got to do, LeBron, but you'll miss it. He's going to miss the expectation of winning. People are going to be surprised if he wins now.
I told people this. I always thought that LeBron has his interests are elsewhere, and I think he came back to Cleveland to finish out his career. His contract ends next year. Who knows? He may walk away. He may walk away from basketball. He's already been in the league 10 years. He said he didn't want to play long. I think 15 is the number that a lot of athletes try to get to because they, you know, they get their money or retirement once they've been in 10 years, but I would like to stay 15. I remember my old client, Dale Ellis. He just got at 15, and we had to do some things so he can make sure he has money to last until then. So I think he's trying to wait around until he's 15. Don't get me started talking about Mr. Ellis. What's up, Dale?
I was going to say, I thought he was there longer than 15, but that's cool.
I think Dale played maybe about 17, 18. He could have played longer than that.
Forgot to say this one in my top of news story. You know the movie that's out called Sniper?
Yeah.
The Iraq vet and ex-U.S. Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, who's known as the deadliest sniper in U.S. history, he got shot last week. So I just want to say that he's not with us anymore.
Just as the movie comes out.
Now, he was shot by another vet. He and another guy was shot. Now, he apparently showed no remorse for all of the people who he killed in Iraq. So the Defense Department says this is about 168. He says about 250. So he went on to the BBC and said, every person I killed, I strongly believe they were bad. And he said, when I go, face God, there's going to be lots of things that I have to account for, but killing those people is not one of them. He got shot and killed. You can't say that just because somebody's paying you in a war. You can't call other people bad people because they could just be defending themselves. So you can't, you know what I mean? That whole moral judgment thing.
Well, this goes back to 2 weeks ago when we had this conversation about that movie, The Interview. And since that time, we've seen what happened with that. I have a problem. I know the United States, well, we as a free country, we can say what we want to say. But I have a problem when we do propaganda movies to talk about other countries and do that stuff. I have a problem with that. You shouldn't talk about another person's country and their leader and talk about going to kill them. This movie, Sniper, the 30-second trailer that I saw when I first saw it, I said, I'm not going to see this movie, and I won't review it. Because the woman comes out, she hands a gun to her, or a bomb, or whatever it is, to her son.
To a little kid.
And he's trying to make that decision, does he shoot the little kid or does he shoot the woman? And I said, that's it. You know, there's things you go where you cross the line, and you're doing nothing but selling propaganda. I'm against that. I'm against that, and I don't like it at all.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we celebrate movies like that. Like, so as the United States and our arrogance, it's like, oh, yeah, this is something to go eat with some popcorn as this guy shoots this kid. War is ugly, but there's no reason for all of that.
And that's not even war, because what you're doing is you're not telling the truth from – you're not telling the whole truth. You're not telling – the U.S. side's truth or why they're involved.
Yeah.
You're just telling that one side, and you're trying to make people of a different race or different nationality out to be these bad people, and that's not true.
Right. And actually, the funny thing about – well, nothing's funny about it, but the interesting thing about it is that's what the cell is. It's the cell propaganda. So just like with Bush and those guys, we shouldn't have been in Iraq the first time or anyway – and we're going to sell a movie celebrating somebody doing something really ill to the people in a place that we shouldn't have never been. I don't know. It's just me. But, all right. So I just wanted to say that. And also, you know, I did do a couple of laws, but here's a couple just in case you're traveling finesse. Some new laws that kicked in at the beginning of the year. More than 21 states and several cities raised the minimum wage. Oakland is the highest. They raised theirs to $12.25 beginning in March, and then San Francisco passed an incremental hike. Theirs is $11.05. And New York, do you know, it is now illegal to take a selfie with a tiger, lion, or a big cat? You can get 15 days, a $250 fine. Now, let me tell you why this is important. Can you believe people would go to the zoo and take a selfie with a lion and get snatched and pulled in the cage? They had to make a law.
I didn't know that. Well, how close were they to the cage?
No, they were getting pulled in.
Pulled in by who?
The lion. Get close
so
to the lion.
How do
where
you get that close to the cage? How do you get that close to a cage to take yourself?
Again, we're Americans. You talk about the arrogant of, I want to take a picture with a lion, and people actually started climbing over the enclosures to take a picture with a predator.
See, that's that white people.
That shouldn't even be a law.
That's just white people stuff. I feel that you could go ahead and take that picture if you want to, but your family will not get any money because you're dumb behind climbing the fence, and I almost swore.
Yeah. See, we should do a move about that, but then now we'd be the bad guys. That'd just be wrong. And if you're in Illinois, the speed limit has changed. So if you're driving through Illinois, it's now 70 miles per hour, and for semis it's 60. There's a no more ticket quota for police. And if you get pulled over and issued a ticket, your driver's license won't be held as bond anymore. So they can't do that.
Well, I also want to add, you talked about the minimum wage. I want people to think about stuff. In your so-called big three states, the big political states, and let me throw D.C. in there, you notice how the minimum wage didn't barely go up to nothing. There's no difference between $8.15 and $8.49 an hour.
Oh, gosh, that's what it went up to?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, technically what the president said, he said everywhere across the board it should at least be 10. That's enough of a living wage for people to live. So people that are involved politically and want to, you know, voice their concern, you remember that next time you go to the polls or you nominate somebody for office, you tell me, can you live off $8.15?
Oh, and I do want to say, in other stupid news, a woman in Idaho was killed by her 2-year-old. He was shot from a gun in her handbag at Walmart. Now, they paint the picture of that woman as she was a responsible gun owner, but she was killed by her 2-year-old.
With the safety off.
She was responsible. I'm just saying.
I just want to know what 2-year-old know to take the safety off.
I guarantee you this. You want to talk about black on black crime. If that child was black, they would be clear, they would say the child must have been watching whatever movie and PlayStation. It must be breaded in them, but it happened in a state where you have very little black people. I just have to say that for a record. Idaho has a lot of militia, too, so I don't want to go there. But
yeah,
there will be no mixing up of saying that black folk had anything to do with that.
Well, you know, some fans, if it had been black, somebody was getting arrested. It would have been a tragedy, but the baby would have been going to jail for something.
I kept thinking, how are y'all going to lock the baby up for half his life if he too? Like, what are you going to do? Because they would have made some reason to lock up a black child.
We're not making light of it because it is a tragedy, but we've seen cases where a black infant, black young kid, and mistakenly got a gun, whatever the case, and then there's a big investigation and somebody's going to jail. I don't care if she does have a carrying license, how is it a 2-year-old gets hold of your gun with the safety and takes the safety off?
I can tell you why I'm making light of it. I'm making light of it because we always, you know, feel compassion for folks that don't look like us, but they have none for us. And so I'm making light of it because I didn't read enough of the story to know this woman's background or to play on her child. I don't know them personally and don't know anything about them. I am talking about the act of an infant or a 2-year-old shooting a gun in a handbag. So NRA, get up on that, where you start talking about handgun safety and rights and people's rights to carry. When that stuff starts happening, you need to chalk that up as that's a part of your agenda. Also, Boston Mayor, he announced that they have a plan to make the school day 40 minutes longer for 2,300 public school students. Now, I don't know why they're doing it just for the public schools, but they're giving them 40 more minutes in the classroom. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Right, you know, there's some stuff I would say, but I'll be committing some crime, so let me just keep it
to
myself.
You sure would.
I surprised myself.
Okay, you sure did. All right, you listen to Black on Black, right? We're going to take a break and come back on today's show. ESPN anchor Stuart Scott passed away. We're going to talk about him. We have Oprah Winfrey versus Black Leadership and Lou Gossett Jr. We're going to talk about this finesse versus Director Steve McQueen. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Black on Black Crime on F3 Radio.
McCormick salutes the dinner makers, the ones who start with a pinch of something delicious and turn it into something even better, the recipe followers, and the ones who wing it, those creators of yumminess who know that natural herbs and spices are at the heart of the flavor that brings people together. Here's to you. Here's to homemade. There is nothing better. McCormick, America's favorite seasoning. Live deliciously.
Susie is dying to meet you.
Oh, steer clear of Kristen. She can't control herself around chocolate. She'll devour you.
Really?
I'd be a terrible friend if I didn't warn you. Gotta go.
Yeah, thanks for introducing us.
Anything for a friend.
Ooh, strong grip. Ow!
So, you want to grab a bite somewhere?
Here's fine.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
When we got married, we were suddenly a family of five.
And a seriously mixed bag of laundry. And we don't always have the time or the money to wash everyone's jeans and towels and gym clothes separately. So we wash everything in cold water with Tide. And it all comes out great. Even Sarah's funky new shorts.
Those are mine.
Really?
No. Yes.
Okay.
Throw it all in, because Tide cleans better, even in cold.
Sculpting the sleek body of the all-new Mercedes-Benz GLA took nearly 600 pounds of high-strength steel. Setting industry-leading safety standards took 20,800 crash simulations. And perfecting its engine took over 1.1 million miles of extreme driving. But this may be the most impressive number of all. Introducing the all-new Mercedes-Benz GLA. Mercedes-Benz, the best for nothing.
Dove Men Plus Care presents How to Stay in Shape. Step one, gotta work those arms.
How was it?
Good.
Step two, keep those legs strong. And step three, don't forget your back. Dove Men Plus Care. Care for what matters.
If you don't mind, would you pull that bass up a little bit more, Mom? Pull up them drums, a little high. I want to hear them drums kicking. Kicking so hard, you can feel it way back in Mississippi.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. We're on with Vanessa. What's up, Vanessa?
What's going on?
All right. Now, you can call in 909-265-9189 to join in on the program. Everyone online, thanks for joining us. The chat is open. Lavinia should be properly – I haven't looked in there, so she's in there yelling at me. The chat is open. Coach Dean is coming on to the show in a little bit when we talk about Stuart Scott, so that'd be cool that Coach Dean is coming in. So on this program, iconic ESPN anchor Stuart Scott passed away. We have Oprah Winfrey versus Black Leadership. And first, we're going to start off with Lou Gossett Jr. versus Steve McQueen. Now, here's what happened. This happened a while ago, but since the movie is coming
should I pour me a drink right about now?
You might want to pour a drink on this one, because I know you're going to yell. I think it's next week, the movie, this highly anticipated book from Lawrence Hill called The Book of Negroes is making its television premiere. Now, it's CBC on January 7th, which is Canadian Broadcasting. It was made in Canada. It's a six-part miniseries, including Academy Award-winning actor Lou Gossett Jr. and Cuba Gooding Jr. Now, the internationally co-produced six-part miniseries follows the story of an African woman named Amala Diallo. She's kidnapped from Africa, sold into slavery in the southern U.S., and she makes her way all the way up to Canada, I think. And Lou Gossett Jr., who plays Daddy Moses, sounds like another show, but anyway, is the African-American slave who helped lead. I wasn't going to say that, but I guess we shouldn't be joking on that. But anyway, he's going to lead a band of runaways to freedom He says the book of Negroes is a fresh take on the theme. So slavery, this is Lou Gossett. He said slavery is very much involved in this lady's life, but it's really a triumphant story about a woman who can tell the story. In that way, it's better than Roots and 12 Years of Slaves because it's a portrait, like it's a picture, is what he said. So I don't know if he was slamming 12 Years of Slave because he did this interview when 12 Years of Slave came out initially, and we know that Lou Gossett was in Roots. So to bring both of those in, I was wondering if that's a black-on-black crime. I'm going to let you have it from there.
He knows better. He should stick to making those Eagle 1, 2, and 3, and 4 movies and leave comments like that alone. You know what I'm saying? You don't make comments like that at all. You know how hard it is to be in a black film, to get one made, especially about us. So why would you say and pit one against each other? Because every film is different, and we have so many black stories that haven't been told. How else can we get over racism and talk about racism and teach people we do have a life of what we've been through? I don't see any kind of negativity when Jewish folks make films or Latino makes folk films about their culture. But black folks, when we make a film, we try to tear it down. Got to stop that. And Lou Gossett, he knows better. Your fabulous Eagle movies were so fantastic, I can't wait to not see them on Netflix.
Flag. You like commissions and all on that one.
That won't be on my view list.
Oh, God. Well, the miniseries is not just playing in Canada. They're actually playing it on BET, so they may be in the next couple of days. They may be simulcasting, you know how they do that, and have it on BET. But Lou Gossett's statement to me, it's just wrong to invoke. Like, we have to always compare ourselves to the next black person. So that is a crime. He didn't say it was better than Schindler's List of Freedom.
Exactly.
Like, he didn't pull anybody else.
If you want to say that. Didn't get me interested. But don't say, oh, it's better than 12 Years a Slave. That's a different story.
Right, and I understand the hype. I'm understanding, you know, he knew that they were Academy Award considerates at that time, and people are praising them, and they won the Golden Globes by that time and all of that. But I guess he said, y'all like that black movie, look at this one. That's what
exactly.
I'm trying to help
him out. And by the way, did he win a Golden Globe for them Eagle movies?
As I take a sip
of wine,
Negro.
People wonder about that.
The Book of Negroes, in 2007, that novel was named after the actual historical document, which records the names and descriptions of thousands of Loyalist slaves who were granted their freedom and sent to Nova Scotia, Canada. Cuba Gooding Jr. said he was blown away when he heard the story. He hadn't known of the story until the project was pitched to him. He said, it was one of those moments in my career where I just shook my head and said, what was I doing in school? I can imagine that. What was I doing in school? And what was the circumstances that we didn't learn anything about African-American history? Cuba Gooding just said that.
Let me jump in there. And, well, I didn't know. There's a lot of things in black history I know, and you know I'm a reader. You're a reader. And that's why I say when we have these films, these are good things. So for him to admit that, that's good. And that what made him want to be in that film. Now, you compare that to what Lou Gossett said. And again, I ask you, did those Eagle movies even win the Moon Award as I take another sip of wine?
I don't think so. And that is the point. Okay, but again, we're going to hit this when we talk about Oprah, so I just might as well put this out here right quick, that sometimes your elders do get off track on you. And so he might have just been talking and said, oops, I didn't realize what I was saying, because he was talking to the Canadian broadcast company. He was talking to their news. So it was he did say it in Canada, but you know media. I mean, we have internet now, Lou Gossett. You can't just say stuff.
I don't care if
you
said it on a set of Eagles. You don't say that.
Well, you're going to go with, I'm guessing, that Lou Gossett committed a black-on-black crime on this one.
As sure as I'm black and Kevin Dorsey is black, and that's a black-on-black crime.
Oh, man. I guess that works for me, and I'm going to go with you. So there is no split decision on this. Lou Gossett Jr., I'm about to commit a black-on-black crime. At least he's not committing a Stacey Dash kind of crime. So you still,
no.
We still with you. You're still on the same team, but that was just wrong.
You just got to be corrected.
Yeah, we just got to acknowledge that and keep it moving. So Lou Gossett,
that's right.
Our first victim of the new year for black-on-black crime. I just got a breaking news, and Commish said she won't be until the top of the hour. So we got a little leeway, Finesse.
I'm going to commit a flag like the Dallas Cowboys did yesterday. Oops.
and you're going to pull it up? Pull up the flag.
Oh, of course. Dallas won. That's my team.
Oh, that's
for
right.
Me right now.
Oh.
All right.
Well, you got to do that. Hey, you wanted to mention Selma.
No, we can mention it.
Selma,
we're talking films. Yeah.
Okay.
I want everybody to know Selma opens this Friday. And I'm always telling people, especially when it's black films, check the ticket stuff. Because there's still shenanigans where there's a mandate that comes down for a film they expect to do well and it doesn't. And they tell the studios or the movie houses to give them tickets for another movie. I actually lived this experience when Malcolm X first came out, and we got tickets for Aladdin. I will never forget it. And I remember I got the number
got
to 40 Acres and a Mule, and I said to Spike Lee people, they're giving tickets to Aladdin for 40 Acres and, instead of Malcolm X. And that set up, we were one of many that set off the whole thing about Spike Lee was getting robbed. And he did
right.
Get robbed. So other than releasing bootlegs behind our backs to people to bootleg on the street to bring down the sales of black films, this is another trick that they use. So we're not telling you something that's made up. We're telling you something that's true. Check your ticket stubs. Make sure you get the right ticket for Selma. It opens this Friday. It's an educational event, so please take your family. I just heard this white woman doing a review of a movie. She thought it was great, but she said, I'm not sure if you take your kids because I don't think they'll understand. No, folks. Stop using excuses.
That's why you need to take
your
kids.
Exactly. If your kid can sit up and watch SpongeBob, they damn sure enough can sit up and watch Selma.
Okay. I don't know if the critics will agree for that about the SpongeBob Selma analogy. But
oh, yeah?
Okay.
You seen the suggestive stuff SpongeBob says and does? We all know what they were doing in the Mystery Man and why Shaggy was always hungry.
I have to say, I didn't know what Scooby-Doo and the teenage kids riding around in a psychedelic van that always had smoke coming out of it when they stepped out the van. I didn't see that coming.
And I guess you didn't know. I guess you didn't know Thelma was the first gay character in cartoons, besides Peppermint Patty from Charlie Brown. That's a whole other topic.
Okay, that's a whole other topic. Okay, we're not going to that. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. You can call in and join us, 909-265-9189. Top 5 is still out there. Go check it out. Chris Rock.
I told you. That I'm going to see it again for the sixth time.
Are you? Oh, man. Okay.
Well, you know,
all
I
right.
Get screeners, so I don't have to pay for the screeners, but then I try to support the movie and go and give them my cash later on.
I know, you know, we do that when we review movies and books. Sometimes I actually go back and buy the books or something just to support. So we have to do that.
Yeah.
Now, on that note, let's go in directly into our Oprah Winfrey versus black leadership. Now, Oprah claims that Ferguson protests don't have leadership. She felt the wrath of what they said was black Twitter. So in an interview with People, Oprah applauded the Pound Black Lives Matter movement, but criticized it for what she claims not having leadership. She said, I think it's wonderful to march and to protest, and it's wonderful to see all across the country people doing it. But what I'm looking for is some kind of leadership to come out of this and say, this is what we want, and this is what has to change, and these are the steps that we need to take to make changes. And this is what we're willing to do to get it. She said, I think that what can be gleaned out of our film Selma, this is another note, is to really take note of the strategic intention required when you want real change. I don't really know where to go with this, but I'm going to let you have this first.
Okay. And there's a cross part in here because now that I'm reading Oprah's statement and I'm seeing what you're saying – Oprah was therefore, in essence, backing what Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and those the older generation of civil rights leaders when they just want to march. I get that. But this is not 65. 65 is different. What the, if you want to include the film, she was trying to push that. What 65 shows is the reason why we're still doing it in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the issue, what I have with all of this, and we talked about this earlier, two things. I have never believed in putting a hood over my head or putting my hands up in the air. I don't care what kind of symbolism it does. That's just, to me, that made no sense. That's like we're surrendering. I'm not doing that. I'm more action. I'm more of a Black Panther. If I was back in the 60s, I probably would have been a Black Panther because I'm about action. You know, even right. You and I both know those folks who didn't do the homework on King. King was evolving around to that, but that's a whole other topic.
Right.
I like, and I've been trying to find it, but there was a judge that was in the civil rights movement, a prominent judge. He wrote like an open letter to Al Sharpton disagreeing with his tactics for this new movement on Ferguson. He said the young people should evolve, should be more involved than what you have them. Remember, we were once young when we led the movement, same age, in the 20s and in the 30s. And with the young people out of Ferguson, these young people in New York, they're not saying we don't want you to be a part of it, but you should include us because we're getting more work done. And if you look, in D.C., there was only 10,000 people. In New York, when that protest took, six times the amount of people. And
right.
You're starting to see some things change. I'm not ever marching because it doesn't mean anything. I have friends who are not Black, and they say, why do Blacks continue to march? So they understand and recognize you have to do more. We have to understand and recognize more. That's twofold, because the other end of this, on the other spectrum, we understand that certain people haven't evolved in our group, in our Black leaders, who know their money comes from keeping confusing or being part of the conversation to be called on to say, oh, we're the leaders and we speak for Black America. That's something we have to change, and that's something that I see a lot of the white news media, they're seeing, well, there's other voices. We didn't know that. There's a whole group of young kids, one of them I'm interviewing in a couple of weeks to be in the newspaper. He's a hip-hop artist. There's so many young people who have some brilliant ideas and want change and are working with the community to help change these things. So they're not just being rebellious and don't want to listen. They're actually trying to do active change, and they don't believe in the marching as per se they're marching. Again, that's 65. For 65, that's needed. But we can't keep doing it. We ain't getting the same result.
Right.
You're just now, not. You're not getting. You know, the wheel evolved. You know, the tires have gotten better. They've gone further, whatever. Same should be with the march. There has to be more to it than we just march. It can't be the same thing. It has to be more. We have to get more out of what we're asking and what we demand.
I agree with you. In part, I don't disagree. But here's the thing. I don't think that young people, I think they don't really get the fact that throughout history, major media only lets a certain number of Black people speak at a time. So, of course, when you want media, people call Reverend Sharpton. But you can't blame Reverend Sharpton for being in the forefront when people call him, for one. And more importantly, that every movement takes its own direction. Like, we need to hit it from all fronts. So whatever you're doing in your community or your hometown, continue to do that, because you can't look at somebody else and say, why is he talking for us? We need to be talking for ourselves. Get out there and talk. That is our character flaw, that we always kind of fight each other for the little bit of space that someone else gives us. So like we do on this show and on many other shows, people go out and they speak what's on their mind without saying, hey, you shouldn't be saying anything. I get to say it, right? People put in work, and they did put in a lot of work. So technically I'm not telling anybody to shut up. I am just saying stop fighting when we all have nothing. So you got to be really careful about fighting your leaders, because wisdom, you age into wisdom. Sometimes it takes a little time to sink in. And I think what happens in other communities is that the Dick Cheneys and those guys of the world are working things behind the scenes and everybody complains about all of these secret society stuff, those are not young people. So we lose our wisdom because our young people like to fight their elders, and nobody has anything. But the elders sometimes do need to step aside and let them go out and push forward and let the soldiers be soldiers and all of that good stuff. That fight needs to be fought on a lot of different fronts, and we need to get smarter.
Well, in defense of the young people, they're not saying we don't want you to speak. But you can't organize an event based on Ferguson and don't have anybody from Ferguson. These young people are
from
the ones that started this thing in Ferguson. You can't do that, and that's the problem. And they're saying it's too corporate. And from being on the inside and helping Ferguson spread the word from newspaper to newspaper, the St. Louis American is the black newspaper there, and I suggest people follow the news on what's happening in Ferguson with them. From talking with them, and they're saying they're coming, trying to come in and make this more corporate. They're not getting the people here. That's where the issue I have. I agree. Young and old need to work, and that's a problem across the board. Not just with this, but even when we see young people, there's a disconnect. Young people, old people, in our community, we need to fix that. So that part, totally agree. But the argument is where we have our civil rights leaders who are more involved and more concerned with corporate instead of what the issue should be and is, and letting young people have a voice. Because you have to start molding young leaders. At some point, you got to mold young leaders.
Yeah, and we're not talking about anybody
doing that.
We're not talking about anybody who's made Uncle Ruckus watch and, you know, all of that stuff, you know, the people who are on, you know, Fox and those guys who are trying to get publicity. I'm not going to say names, but like people like Tavis and us. But I would be committing a black-on-black crime if I said Tavis' name, so I can't really
say you said Cornel West.
If I said Cornel West, you know, if that would just be wrong, or Stacey Dash or somebody. And that reminds me, you know, we still have our committee for our racial draft, so anytime you make Uncle Ruckus watch at the end of the program, we're going to actually do a racial draft. So just wanted to share that part as well. Now, to close this part out, did Oprah commit a black-on-black crime versus black leadership?
I think it's not more so of a black-on-black crime. I think it's more of a gender crime, because what you're basically saying is, well, the older civil rights leaders should be doing it, when it's the young people that were already doing it before the civil rights leaders even got there. And there's, you know, so you have to give a chance. So I'm not going to say it's a black-on-black. That doesn't, you know. And I know some women out there probably like, you can't tell Oprah wrong. Yes, we can. Oprah's wrong, too. Oprah ain't
yeah,
God. She ain't make nothing in 7 days and none of that. When you show me what she made in 7 days like God, then we'll put her in that category.
Yeah.
Until then,
Oprah is not the poster child of civil rights. Like, that's
right.
The issue. So I'll tell you really quickly on my take on Oprah on this is, for Oprah to say that is not to know that the agenda of the protest were first to get that fool convicted. If she can't see what the agenda was, it was fairness and bringing the Justice Department. I think they're very clear at what you're protesting. Now, if you want somebody to co-opt your movement, try to say, hey, if you give us a couple of Pepsis and some Cheetos, we'll stop protesting. I think that's the wrong way to go. I think Occupy Wall Street showed the way that if you do not specify agenda items, you can change more in society by having discontent by the way somebody's doing business.
I think I said gender, and I'm wrong. It's age discrimination. I don't think it's black on black crime. I think it's age. I said gender.
Do you think they have age issues? All right.
I think they do.
So
I think we do.
Okay. So you say no black on black crime. I'll go with you on this one. I'll say no black on black crime. But she is treading very close to the line on black crime for this one. For me, be a leader and stop pointing fingers when you have the mic. Just want to say.
Right.
All right. Now,
don't make me start talking about some of your television shows you have on your network.
See, I would commit crimes all day, and we might want to do that before Kamisha gets in, but her network is getting a little bit of Amos and Andy-ish.
Mm.
I'm not sure if you saw that Madonna has apologized after receiving black backlash for posting a Photoshop image of MLK, Nelson Mandela, and Bob Marley. She posted an apology on her Facebook page for an image that depicted the music and civil rights icons with black cords covering their face. She said, I'm sorry, is what she wrote. She said, I'm not comparing myself to anyone. I'm admiring and acknowledging their rebellious hearts. And she also defended the post by saying, "This is neither a crime or an insult or racist. I didn't do it. My fans did it, and I just reposted these photos. My fans aren't racist either. And if they put me in the same category as these other people, thank you, I'm flattered, and I hope to one day live up to 1/100th of what those people accomplished." Her apologies started taking a turn for me, so I'm going to let you go on this one for this.
I just don't pay attention to Madonna anymore. When she came out against hip-hop artists about 7 years ago, she made that parody video, and she was talking about hip-hop artists. And I'm like, Madonna, you have done some things over the years. So I don't pay attention to Madonna. You guys know how I feel about, especially in social media, once you put it out there, it's out there. But on the flip side, for these black folks, as you know, every year, SB, around this time, I go on my soapbox about these fools and these images of MLK on these party celebration postcards.
So on a party flyer?
So if you go off on my Madonna about that, you better be going off on these people that's going to be posting booty shaking music and all you can drink with MLK pictures on it. You should be complaining against McDonald's,
okay,
that greasy ass chicken that be coming out.
That,
complaining
okay,
against all of it.
Clever,
not just Finesse,
Flexa. But you are committing crime right here.
I did.
You
I
turned
commit,
from Madonna
said,
to beat up
I
people
said,
on MLK Day.
No. I said, if you're going to do that, you got to be balanced and do it all the way around. That's all I'm saying. I didn't commit.
I don't think it's one or the other. She said, in defending her post, she said this is neither a crime or an insult or racist to compare herself to Mandela, Bob Marley, and Martin Luther King. And I say the first sign of saying something, knowing if something is racist, is when you say it's not racist. That is the first sign, because she's trying to sell albums. That's what she's doing. She's selling her CDs.
Oh, yeah.
And so she has images of them the same way as she is on her CD. So she is exploiting them. If she's selling something and she's using their images, she's not paying honor to them.
Right.
So
she's trying to make money. Yes, I agree.
Exactly. She has never been remotely close to civil rights to actually
the closest she's been
put
to
herself
civil rights
in the category.
She slept with Big Daddy Kane and Dennis Rodman. That's the closest she came to civil rights.
Oh, God. All right, you listen to Black on Black Crime. You can call in 909-265.
Damn, that was a good one. I got to remember that. Let me write that down.
Oh, you want to write that down? 909-265-9189. If you're on the line, hit 1 on your line. I'll bring you in. But Finesse is always tilted at a lie. She missed her window, but I'm sure she'll be like in the archives yelling at me a little later. All right. I don't know what I think about Madonna. Now, here's Jay-Z. He said that hip-hop has done more for race relations than most icons. So, Sean Jay-Z Carter. We know he's earned
nearly 20 icons?
Most, yes. Let me put it in context. He earned almost 20 Grammys, I guess, would make him mainstream, holds the records for the most number one solo albums, and solidified his place as one of the world's best-selling artists in history, I guess. And he said, through it all, he's seen the music as well as his fans change over the decades, and now he shares his admittedly interesting take on the genre of hip-hop, their impact. Now, he said the impact, Jay-Z says, that isn't limited to any one group, age, range, background, or geographic location either. This music didn't only influence kids in urban areas. People listen to this music all around the world, and they took to the music. Racism is taught at home. He said it's very difficult to teach racism when your kids looks up the Snoop Dogg. He said outside the home, hip-hop music has brought people together as well. We all realize that we're more alike than we are separate. So he's saying hip-hop kind of brings people together to start a conversation. That's what Jay-Z says. All right. Finesse, you're on.
He's right. Music, sports, entertainment do bring people together. But it's the artist or the performer or the athlete. It's what they do with that as they grow as a person. It's what they do to show. It's because they have these people undivided attention. So if Jay-Z was to say, outside of the music, I need you guys to read more books, I need you to push the reading, and people did that, that's what you do when you have that platform. And I, from a business standpoint, I love Jay-Z to death. I love what he does from a business standpoint and how he's grown as a business person, and I follow that. I follow what he does, and I think that's a great example. But if he's talking about hip-hop has done more for Icon, it all depends on who we're talking about, because Weezy ain't do nothing from an Icon standpoint to help us free at last, and I would never, ever put what those that have died for the cause in with the same example. So he's crazy for saying that. But if he wants to lead by example, then lead by example, because he's in the spotlight now, because he makes music, he's bringing people together, that's what you do. But when you have that platform, like a Muhammad Ali, like a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like a Jim Brown, like a Stuart Scott, who we're going to talk about later on, it's what you do with it when you have it, not because you make money and you're still saying the same thing because you're not doing anything with it. So I disagree full-heartedly. Do I think it's a black-on-black crime? I got to say no, because I think Third Base has done more for the culture of hip-hop and for black movement than Jay-Z or any of the
Jay-Z
cool
has. Yes. Now, he's saying it's done more for race relations than most icons. And I don't know, he didn't say black icons, so I'm gonna interject here to say that he just meant for anybody in particular when talking about the crossover races. Now, I think he's wrong when it comes to the contributions of a Richard Pryor. Like, people in entertainment, or Eddie Murphy, who has crossed many lines, Denzel Washington. When it comes to entertainers, there's a lot of entertainers who did a lot to for race relations to have a bigger presence than themselves. But you can go way back on this. You can go back to Josephine Baker kind of stuff, of her going to France and how big she was there, and the way that black people were appreciated in all other parts of the world than just in the United States. I mean, we know for a fact that black music makes more money and for years have made more money overseas than they did in the United States. So how a lot of entertainers have survived in the music industry is when they stop getting accepted here, they go on their tours overseas and fill stadiums, you know, to keep hip-hop alive for a little bit, you know, in the other countries. So, but I figure he doesn't know enough to say how far apart the races were, knowing that some of those people had to die out first. I don't think he sees that.
And these people had to give their life as icons. All he has to do is make a record and put a message in it. So he can't say that. And if you don't consider yourself as an icon to make change, then something's wrong with you.
Right. But I'm saying people like Sammy Davis Jr. or the Nicholas Brothers, or people who just kind of came outside and performed in venues that wasn't predominantly black, that also helped smooth out the extreme racism of black people can't do this or they can't do that. I think there's a lot of people. You know, Bill Cosby broke from iSpy.
And there's still, the thing is with those stories are deeper, because what do they have to do to behind the scenes? Did they have to ride on, you know, stay in hotels and stay with friends because they couldn't stay at the hotel? So there's so many stories going back to what we talked about earlier when you were talking about these movies. You know, we have a story and a voice to tell. You just named, you know, a couple of them that should be movies, but once you delve in to see their iconic, what they went through. You know, Sammy Davis went through a lot because it was a Rat Pack. Black folks called him a traitor because he said he was Jewish and a whole bunch of other stuff. So those guys are iconic because the steps they took and stayed by them, knowing that they could, their lives could be killed. They could be killed.
Right. In addition to that, I think that somebody like Dick Gregory, his life story should be told because of the Jack Parr show, the original Tonight Show. Dick Gregory is the person that the first black person to come on there, when black people couldn't sit on the couch of Jack Parr's show, he told them he's not going on there anymore. And Jack Parr was saying, what are you talking about? And they changed their policy of putting black folks on TV. He's sitting up there smoking a cigarette, if you ever check out those old black and white shows. But he was sitting there. That was Dick Gregory that did that. So he's just not talking noise. He had to walk through that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once you mentioned that, just remind me of something that I missed in the news, and I didn't mean to skip over it, but spiritual leader of the Black Hebrews movement, he was 75 years old, died in Israel, Ben Amini Ben Israel, who was a follower, you know, this is 1969 is when he left. So thousands of African Hebrew Israelites still remain in the U.S. and the Caribbean and in Africa. So he left this country with that movement. He believed that some black Americans are descendants of the ancient Israelite tribe, passed away last Saturday. But he was born in Chicago in 1939.
Yep. And see, that's another story.
Yep. And you could do that story, right? The group refused to convert to Judaism, even though it would have entitled them to citizenship in Israel, and they wouldn't do it. They considered themselves to be the true Jews of ancient Israel, and they would not convert. Now, that is dedication to your beliefs. He passed away last Saturday.
Now, wow. So many stories, it's not even funny.
And I'm not saying that I'm not surprised that nobody is doing these stories, but we have to talk about them. That's why it's important that we do stories and do things and talk about some things that other people act like don't exist. Black people don't have commitment. Black people can't stay together. You know how people say stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, and we have to support. We have to support the films, the music, the books, the stuff that comes out in order that we can build our money up so we can tell those stories ourselves.
All right. And, again, I know we're talking about Oprah a little bit, but Oprah, stop talking about people being leaders. You are a leader. Own it and step out and set an agenda if you want one. See, I like she ain't one of them no more. Mm. You know, although I'm playing this bump music, I'm going to play at some point They Don't Care About Us, the Michael Jackson song that they banned from MTV because they hate what he was saying in it. We can't continue to bury stuff just because major media doesn't like it. It makes them feel uncomfortable. So here you go. So Sammy Davis was Jewish, and there was a black Hebrew movement that's still going on now with thousands of members that you don't know about. All right, just want to let you know, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We're going to take a break and come back on this show. Our main topic today is ESPN iconic anchor Stuart Scott passed away, and we're going to talk about this after this break. So we'll be back after this message.
Hi, I'm LeBron James. I know how important it is to take care of yourself, your friends, and your family. That's why I want to tell you about the health insurance marketplace at healthcare.gov. You can go there to find an affordable health plan as part of the healthcare law. The deadline to enroll is March 31st, so sign up now. You never know when you might take a hit. Spread the word and get covered today.
When it came to hot water, we were a house divided.
That is until we switched to Tide cold water.
When we did laundry, Junior here couldn't take his usual two-hour hot shower.
It's called hygiene.
Now with Tide cold water, we've reached a truce because we get a great clean and cold.
Saving the hot water for Captain Prunehands here.
Rip Van Winkle.
Sir Rent-a-Lot.
The Dean of Steam.
Lord of the Looper. Don't leave. Where are you going?
I wonder why I take long showers.
Tide, better cold water clean than the bargain brand and warm.
That's my Tide. What's yours?
Oh, those boys are much too much. Those boys are much too much.
We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We're going to beat them and bust them.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
Let's get
A little bit rowdy.
R-O-W-D-Y. Take time to be a dad today. Call or visit fatherhood.gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime on S3 Radio. Today's program, ESPN iconic anchor Stuart Scott passed away. I'm on with Finesse. Couldn't hit the button. What's going on, Finesse?
What's going on?
All right. Now, you can call in and join us, 909-265-9189. Put your comments in chat. And remember, you can always send us news and throughout the week at news@soulofsyracuse.com. Now, this is a story that, guys, I didn't even know where to begin with, but Stuart Scott, just in case you don't know who Stuart Scott is one of the most recognizable anchors in SportsCenter history. He died of cancer at the age of 49, and Scott, who had two daughters, was known for his high energy delivery and catchphrases like Booyah and Cool is the Other Side of the Pillow. He fought cancer, the diagnosis, since 2007. He underwent chemo, radiation, and surgery. ESPN said, ESPN and everyone in the sports world have lost a true friend and a unique inspirational figure in Stuart Scott. That's what the president of ESPN, John Skipper, said in a statement. Scott was born in Chicago, attended high school in North Carolina, graduated from the University of North Carolina in 87, worked at three stations in the southern U.S. before joining ESPN in 93 when they launched ESPN2, and often anchored the 11 p.m. Sports Center. Now, I don't know about you, but most of the time when I watched Sports Center, it was the 11 p.m. summary. Stuart Scott went on to cover countless major events for the network, including the Super Bowl, NBA Finals, the World Series, the NCAA Tournament. He also interviewed the president. The president, Barack Obama, also released a statement about Stuart Scott, but I'll do that after we talk to Finesse. I'll let Finesse come in and tell us a little bit about ESPN anchor Stuart Scott.
Well, you know, like I say, Stuart Scott and I were friends, but I had a chance to sit down and talk to him a couple times. We definitely talked about HBCU sports and his role. You know, he knew he was setting an example for a lot of us black males that wanted to get into sports casting. We had the Irv Crosses, the Bryant Gumbels, the Greg Gumbels, but they were more corporate. When Stuart came on the scene, it was like he was our generation. He was the young black, he was young hip-hop, and he went against the grain at ESPN. The reason why Stuart Scott was on at 11 was because of the phrases and stuff that he used, and you know, ESPN was getting complaints when he was doing it, doing other broadcasts, so they put him on. And then they put Rich Eisen on. And those two did such a wonderful job. Stu was iconic, and people didn't realize this. They realize it now. He was iconic because what he did was say, I'm going to be me, which is black, but I'm going to be professional in how I do it. I'm going to introduce this world to us, the new culture, a different side of a black man that you don't see, not just this corporate who you want us to be. And not taking away anything from those guys. I love those guys too, Mike Tirico, all those guys, because they had to be a certain way in order for Stu to get the chance that he got. But Stu took it to a whole nother level, and I say this, and I'm so serious, and I don't have numbers to back, but if it wasn't for Stu Scott, I don't think ESPN would be where it is today, because Stu took it to a whole new level. He captivated young black men who now saw themselves as bloggers, as these sports journalists or whatever. They wanted to be Stuart Scott. They said, they were able to say, look, there is something I can be and live up to. And then you had the young kids who were emulating, who liked it, it was cool. So now you bring in all these other people. And Stu brought in the women. The women were like giving, this is who I want to work for, because they let you be yourself. Stu opened up the door. He opened up the door for so many people that he's gone now, young, like a king and like an exit. I don't mean, you know, all the stuff that he did civil rights, but he's iconic in that nature. in that he gave us hope and a voice and kicked down more barriers for us to proceed and move forward. He still never forgot who he was. He was in the movie Drumline, which is about HBCU, you know, college and campus life. He was in movies like that. He never shied away from talking to and mentoring others that came along, be it the sports athlete or be, you know, somebody like myself, and giving us insight and encouragement. He was that kind of dude. And more importantly, he painted another picture of a black man that loved his kids and took care of his kids. He was all of that in a public eye. You didn't hear anything about the dirt or other negative stuff that he was doing. He understood and accepted his responsibility of being that role model. And I love the fact that we had Stuart Scott. And it really hurt me yesterday to the point where I shut it down. Sports really wasn't that important to me because he was somebody I knew, when I saw him, we always talked. And I knew what he was about and what he was trying to do. And to see that, you know, gone, but I felt good when I see the league honoring him, these football leagues, these basketball leagues.
Yeah.
When I saw Rich Eisen do what he did yesterday, I thought that was such amazing. And as an icon, we may not recognize it now while we're alive, but it's what you do while you're alive that paints the picture and gets the message out. So when you're gone, you don't realize how many people you affect and how you change them until after you're gone. I'm glad he got to at least see some of that in the ESPYs, but I'm glad a lot of people recognize that, and I'm glad so many black men spoke up about what Stu meant to them. Because, again, America needs to see that black men, black people have love and they understand when we have role models. We got a chance to see that. This is, for me, and people going to say, well, you're comparing him to Martin Luther King. No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is we had an icon that passed before us and to live it, to experience that. And this was truly something beyond words. He's going to be missed because Stu was one of the best as an individual, as a family man, all of that. Stuart Scott was it.
One of the things that makes an icon, like one of the telltale signs, is that everybody, beside Chris Berman, because Chris Berman's been there a long time, everybody mocks Stuart Scott. And I just want to, matter of fact, while I'm at this, a close friend of mine, Desmond Connor, who's a sports reporter, Hartford Current, and he's syndicated, so he's in the Chicago Tribune and Philadelphia papers, and he covers sports. He actually posted something about Stuart Scott when he was with him at ESPN and wrote a nice article about him. So just want to give him a shout out because the inspiration, it's like 6 degrees of separation, right? So every time you knew him, I have another really close friend that knew him, and it's kind of one of those things that we need to see in real time when we have icons in our presence, and sometimes we forget that the people who are living are icons while they're living, and Stuart Scott was an icon for professional sports broadcasting.
I truly believe this. Had ESPN not had a Stuart Scott, I don't think that they would be who they are today. I really don't, because Stuart opened it up for so many broadcasts after that. Remember, he was the one trying to find that game show they did on there, trying to find the next host. And they did, I think, that for 3 seasons. And he brought out so many of the new anchors they brought on. I mean, he clicked with everybody. And Stuart has worked with everybody, mainly on that set. I think without him, because you need someone iconic to take you to the next level. We had Don Cornelius and Soul Train. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We had Arsenio Hall. You need somebody like that. We had Donnie Simpson. These are iconic figures that took us to our culture, our music, our sound, our style. They took it to the next level and opened up the door. Stuart Scott is just another one in that line. He did it from the sports side, but he was, you know, added to the legacy, and that's how important he is. I truly believe. ESPN can say whatever they want to say, but I truly believe that if there wasn't Stuart Scott, ESPN would just be like another sports channel. I don't think they would have morphed into these other things, because he was able to let them see you don't have to do sports in a traditional way to have fun with sports. You know, so you were able to spawn off a cold pizza. You were, you know, Stewart was in with these athletes.
Oh, right.
And he felt comfortable. He was comfortable with these people, you know.
Yeah,
and they were comfortable with him because he talked like them and looked like them.
Think of everybody who came after, you know, the Stephen A. Smith kind of shows that came on after. Stewart paved the way for that. He made it comfortable so that they can be free enough to do that because he took all the heat.
Right, right.
Stewart's got to took all of the heat.
There would not be no Stephen A. Smith if it wasn't for Stewart Scott. There would not, because there's no way Stephen A. Smith would have had that show if it wasn't for Stewart Scott paving the way so they could say, you know what, maybe that can work. And he knows that,
that
he was iconic. Right.
Now, President Barack Obama – oh, I'm sorry. President Barack Obama released a statement Sunday. He said, I'll miss Stewart Scott. 20 years ago, Stu helped me usher in a new way to talk about our favorite teams and the day's best plays. For much of those 20 years, public service and campaigns have kept me from my family, but whenever I went, I could flip on TV and see Stu and his colleagues on SportsCenter. We were there. He said, over the years, he entertained us, and in the end, he inspired us with encouragement and love. So Michelle and I offer our thoughts and prayers to his family, friends, and colleagues, is what the president said about Stuart Scott.
And there would never be, you know, I heard, I think it was Mike and Mike this morning, and they were correct. There would never be another Stuart Scott, because you can't be a trailblazer and another trailblazer come along. And I'll even go one step further. Even when you look at the inside the NBA, I think Stewart had that much of an influence that you looked at these other networks and they said, well, we can lighten up and do our show. If it wasn't for Stewart Scott, because I saw the clips for Inside the NBA, and it was atrocious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember.
Stewart came along. I think he had that much of an influence, especially for black athletes who wanted to be sportscasters, people like myself that was in media, for the coach teams that wanted to do stuff. He made it possible because now media and producers and sponsors can look at this and say, wow, I didn't know they could do that. Wow, this is just like a read at home. And he was intelligent and he was smart. He was witty. You know, again, he didn't have dirt and drama. You didn't see him out in the club. You didn't hear about him all these crazy sex stuff. You didn't hear that. You heard a family man and someone who loved his job. And he was iconic.
Now,
that's an icon.
Also, think of Stewart Scott. I think of, like, TNT. Like, that whole dynamic that they play in TNT, all of that stuff wouldn't exist. Somebody field-tested that, and Stewart Scott field-tested it for media on how to deliver sports conversation.
Right. And so much so, when Rich Eisen left ESPN to take over a new network called the NFL, I know Rich had a say-so and was like, we need to have people like Stewart. We need to get people like Stewart. We need to let them be themselves because it worked because Rich Eisen and Stewart Scott held the highest rating on ESPN for a long time. That 11 o'clock, all of us, we would call each other. Yo, you watching ESPN? Oh, I got to go. We'd be on the phone. Oh, I got to go. ESPN coming on. At 11 o'clock, what dude you know stand for a TV show and wait is because we saw somebody that looked like us, talk like us, and was an example for us.
I am telling you, 11 o'clock is when I watch sports. Like, any kind of sports wrap-up kind of stuff, it was ESPN SportsCenter at 11 o'clock. It was Stewart Scott.
And let me say this. Somebody just texted me, but it's like, as a friend of mine has said, but you guys had black anchors before. No, we had sports anchors that were black. We had that. Irv Cross. All of them. We had them. We didn't have a black anchor. There's a difference.
Be
Those
clear.
Those guys played corporate roles. They played corporate roles, and I loved them because they were my idols too. But they could. They had to get to a point to it was open wide enough for somebody else to come along and say, I can do this.
Since we're on black on black crime, here's what I want to say about that. Please stop interjecting on when black people call stuff black, because we know that we have to assimilate to work in corporate. And when you're the first black person any place, you do have to assimilate. You don't come in there being Stewart Scott unless some other people came in there to kind of smooth it out. So I'm not going to throw the Greg Gumbos and those guys under the bus, but I'm just saying that we still are saying that he was an icon for bringing younger folks into the mix. Just because somebody's black don't mean that black folks feel comfortable in your world culturally. So there's a big difference in that. And I watch that stuff over social media so much. Black people in particular who have white friends who are, you know, friends of theirs on social media, it seems like they get upset when black people say that they love black folks. And it's really odd. And I think they don't know what supremacy is, because if you're white and you have a black friend and your black friend loves somebody black and you feel like you have a problem because of that, you need to check yourself. That's your issue,
you know,
not your friend.
And I agree. And then sometimes like this is one of those teachable moments, because they don't understand. I think some of them understand, because if you watch SportsCenter's one, they got it. And you know, when you listen to Keyshawn, when you listen to Chris Carter, you're looking to Tommy talk, when you listen to Irvin Sanders, they got what we were saying. But some people don't, and I think at this time, these are just teachable moments. But any other time, I definitely agree with you. Hashtag teachable moment.
Teachable moment. Now, LeBron James also made a statement. He said, "I can't believe you're gone from us. I'm deeply saddened because not only will you not be replaced as an anchor or reporter, but more than a genuine, cool person. What you did for our culture, bringing that swag to reporting, can only be copied, which I hear today on TV watching sports. I would say not because they're stealing your swag, but out of respect. It was always a breath of fresh fun air when you would show up and we'd chat. Thank you so much for being you and giving us inner city kids someone we could relate to that wasn't a player, but was close enough to them," is what LeBron said. I don't know why I stumbled over the end of that. But
is he talking about Deion Waiters or Stuart Scott?
On that note, I think we should bring in the commissioner, because you really need a flag on that one. We're talking about Stuart Scott, not Deion Waiters. The commissioner's on. Hey, Kathleen, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome. How are you?
You're my hero.
You hear from that committing? Okay.
No,
you
I didn't
hear him committing
it.
Crime.
I didn't. I just jumped on and I didn't hear it.
Well,
but I, you know, my condolences go out to Mr. Scott's family and to you know, to all of us in the sports community. What a loss.
See, I forget how much of a sports fan the commish is. I knew you were a big sports
fan.
We all
like the Eagles, don't you?
Here he go. What he was talking about before you came on, that he said you may have heard, is that our earlier topic was Oprah Winfrey's statement about defining black leadership.
Really, because I have not heard her weigh in on a black movement yet. Maybe a mention here or there on Soul Shift about, you know, black hair or a black movement, you know, related to, or a black author or something. But I just, and it's not a criticism, it's just a fact for me. I have never heard her weigh in on a black movement yet, except the movement to elect President Barack Obama. But if that was a black movement, that wasn't a black movement, because not all black people elected him. But anyway, I just...
Yeah,
that
you,
was the
you don't really hear
I've
her.
Heard her. Really heard her yet.
Can we throw a flag on the commissioner? I don't know if we
no,
can, do can we get
no,
away with
no,
this.
No, 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 no. It's in a gray area, and you know I'm looking to throw a flag on the commissioner,
said,
that's but that's a gray area.
And she is a hero. I, you know, it's not that I'm
no,
not
I know, no,
a,
no.
a fan. And I'm just this has just my, been my reality that I haven't really seen her move in that way.
Oh, no, that's everybody's reality. She hasn't. And that was a lot of the criticism that she got about building a school in Africa but not building a school in this country kind of thing. And she was in Chicago. And
oh,
so
now, see,
I know,
I got a flag on this conversation once before. I
nope.
remember this conversation. See, now, cause now you about to make me say some stuff.
I'm about to make you commit a crime.
I actually had put out my mind. Because I know I got in trouble talking about this school before over in Africa. Why are you building a school over in Africa? Why you ain't building one in Chicago or in the United States? So now...
Jerome, I thought you had the answer to that. I thought I heard you say something about that. But anyway, go ahead.
He
I may have. What
flag.
Did I say?
Look at my flag book and see all the fines I got about this
don't
dog
let us go
school
to the
in Africa.
Don't go to the tape.
Anyway, what I heard somebody say, which I thought it was you, Jerome, I thought you said that she tried to build a school in the United States, and she had gotten some kickback from the kids and smart men. I thought somebody told me that. I thought it was you.
I don't remember that. All right.
I still don't see anything wrong with her. I still don't see anything wrong with her building a school in Africa. I really
don't. You can build a school anywhere you want to.
She can build a school whatever you want, but then you can't make no comment on leadership.
On what everybody else should be doing. That's where it gets a little hairy. If you're going to stay out of it, stay out of it. But once you jump in it, you can't tell other people what to do and say we should be open our arms and be like Martin Luther King and negotiate. Like, you can't do that, Oprah, when you have the medium to educate, and then you're putting stuff on OWN. But I'm not going to go there because, Finesse, we were not going to go to her network on this. That would be a black-on-black crash.
I might
so
be
anyway.
Changing my tune. I feel a bunch of flags coming on. How much time we got for the show?
All right. Nope. We're going to go to the phones, and we're going to bring in Lavinia on this one.
Go ahead.
well, hello.
Lavinia,
happy New Year.
Hey, happy New Year.
The way I feel about it, I think where she was going with it, I can see where she was going, but I think a lot of people don't understand or don't want to wrap their heads around the fact that there are so many movements that fall under, that was started by Ferguson. So now I think everybody wants to group everything as to one big, giant conglomerate of a movement, and it's supposed to have one direction. And Jerome said the right thing earlier. You got to attack it from different areas. So, for example, there's a website for FergusonInAction.com, and they have laid out specifically what their demands are, and they're even talking at a national scale. You go to another one called Hands Up United. They have a list of demands. So it's not that we don't have a direction or we need to have one person that points us in one direction. There are different groups that are moving and organized. They're organized in different locations, and each of them have their agendas. We're working together under the entire umbrella of anti-police brutality and making change in legislation in order to protect black lives, because black lives matter. But everyone is moving towards the same goal, but maybe taking different aspects. So I think she's kind of like, she's real short-sighted by saying that there has to be a leader and that there has to be a one known or agreed upon agenda.
Wrong. This is what I was telling you about. These young people have started those movements that she just mentioned, and it's a shame that the older folks in civil rights, and mainly just Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, are not recognizing that. And these people are not saying, we don't want you in the movement, but we want you to recognize that we are part of the movement and you have to include us in it, and you can't make it about what you want and make it corporate. And that's the issue.
Exactly. Like right now, at the point where we have to say we need the wisdom of the old, we definitely need the energy of the young, and we need voices of all of you.
That was my point, is that you have Eric Gardner case, and you have the case of what's the case in Cleveland where the kid was shot on the playground?
Oh, the 12-year-old? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the case recently. There was just one, I want to say it was a couple of days ago, maybe Thursday or Friday, where they just named that they added a special prosecutor to another case where someone else was shot in the back in another
city. That was a female that was shot.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so you have all of these cases, and so you have a movement that's coalescing into the same thing about police brutality and some civil rights issues. And it's not always all about Ferguson's, but I look at it like this. You cannot always integrate every movement. Things need to change in this country, and you need to change state laws like you do federal laws. And so all of those movements are valid, and we need to stop reducing ourselves to one little movement every time something happens. All right. So I want to remind everyone, you listen to Black on Black Crime. I have some stories from the world of news and entertainment. Ever since he left CNN, HLN, as a news anchor, T.J. Holmes has another show. We know he was on BET's late-night talk show, Don't Sleep, that moved to MSNBC. That he's had a lot of jobs. He was on MSNBC where he worked this week in anchor, and now he's on ABC News. They announced that he'll be joining the network and hosting the World News Now, and then the follow-up show, American This Morning, which comes on right after that. He's going to co-anchor that show. T.J. Holmes is going to be tired. I don't know if you saw that.
You know, this is, you know, in all honesty, he's treading the Katie Couric route, because if he doesn't get it right at this network, he's going to have to go independent and come up with a show, and hopefully he'll get syndication. And I don't want to blame him for that BET. I blame BET for that fiasco and not sticking with the show.
Yeah, BET was trying to make a Daily Show, Jon Stewart type of – that's hard to do. If you don't have a sense of humor, you can't pull that stuff off.
I mean, they could have did it at 12 o'clock, but they bounced the show around. That show was not a – what, was the 8 o'clock show, 10 o'clock
mm-hmm.
show? It should have been on at midnight.
I'm sorry, I don't remember. Kamish, Lavinia, did you guys watch that show at all?
I never watched it because I never remembered that it was on. And if it was on at 12 o'clock, I sure wasn't watching it.
And that's another thing with BET, was bad promotion. There was no promo.
The name of the show was,
one day you're watching 106 in Park, 106 in Park went off, and up comes this show.
Okay. VH1 premiered their first episode of that controversial show, Sorority Sisters, a couple of weeks ago.
Hot
Mona
garbage.
Scott Young. So Mona Scott Young, who's responsible for Love and Hip Hop Atlanta and Hollywood, she followed the Group of Nine historical black sororities. There was a lot of petitions. The show was crazy. I don't know what to say about it. I was going to describe it, but I don't want to promote it.
It was horrible.
It, so.
I can. Well, it's not even promoting it. It's just horrible. It's not even worth your time. I watched it. I did a curiosity watch, which means I wanted to see what all the fuss was going to be about, with the intentions of never really watching it again. And I haven't watched any of the episodes since. What two episodes since then? So I couldn't tell you what's happened. But I can tell you that it was bad. It was terrible. And
it was
awful.
Real bad.
I have a problem. And tonight they just did a special show because so many petitions, that they did a special to talk to the girls and how they feel the show is. So if you get a chance, because it's on repeat, the show was not get a chance to write it. But I have a problem when the sororities came out and said, we don't want you wearing letters in a protest, but it's okay for your name to be mentioned and rep on this kind of show. The show was unbearable. After 10 minutes, I had to turn.
Kathleen, did you see any of it?
I saw it that night you told me to turn it on, remember?
Yeah, it was towards the end of it. So I didn't know. Well, we talked about it during the show, Finesse and I,
uh-huh.
and I talked to the commish after the show, and it just
uh-huh.
happened to be on, but it was like the last 10 minutes of it or something. So, I mean, I didn't know if you got a chance to see it, because I think I texted you that it was on.
And that was about all I could tolerate. I don't even think I watched the entire 10.
Okay. I forgot this news story as well last time, is that the Pope blasted their top cardinals and priests and denounced those serving him as being lustful for power and living hypocritical lives and suffering from spiritual Alzheimer's. Now, this Pope has been getting a lot of heat from the people who wanted to live comfortable, but this Pope apparently is shaking up the Vatican. The church was a little bit crazy. Now, in New York City, they started an ad campaign on the subway system with these ads that says, "Dude, stop the spread." Now, of course, this is not a black ad agency, by the way, but the ad will be a bid to tackle what they're calling man-spreading. And so they're saying the Metropolitan Transportation Authority is saying that men, when they sit down, like they open their legs when they sit down, and they're taking up too many seats on the trains. So they started an ad campaign telling guys to stop hogging up space.
Like they're going to listen to that.
I'm out. I can't talk.
You said you're out on that.
What a waste of money.
No, it ain't. That's because you don't ride the train.
No, but I'm just saying, is anybody actually going to do it because there is a dude stop?
I wish they'd give them
well,
a
see, that would probably be more effective, though, if you could do it.
I am trying so hard to keep it clean. That's why I'm going to be quiet.
I've been waiting for them to do this since I was 7 years old. My problem is what took them so long. Didn't they see these guys flailing there? I'm like, come on, really? Really? You got to keep them that wide? What you trying to say, dude? Close them up.
He trying to tell you to read
the line. Come on now. That's just ridiculous.
We didn't know that was such a problem. But
listen,
close up.
See, I was quiet on all that other stuff, but talk about man spreading out there.
Well, I guess I'll just be paying for two fares.
You what?
I'm going to be paying for two fares.
Because you need the room?
I'll leave it like that. Let me keep it clean.